Hello, and welcome to the second episode of the ISSB Implementation Insights podcast. My name is Dinora DeMarco, ISSB Technical Fellow and IFRS S1, S2 Implementation Lead. I'm here today with ISSB Vice Chair Sue Lloyd and ISSB Member Veronica Ponchiva. Today, we'll be talking about the June meeting of the Transition Implementation Group on IFRS S1 and IFRS S2, also known as the TIG. Just to remind you, the TIG is made up of 17 members, mostly preparers, and they discuss at a public forum questions that arise from implementation of IFRS S1 and IFRS S2. There were two questions discussed at the June TIG meeting. Veronica, can you tell us about the first question and the staff views?
Certainly, Dinora. The first question, which for those that have read the TIG papers, is covered in Agenda Paper 1, and it discusses the requirement for entities to revise estimate when new information becomes available about those estimates. The question was submitted to ask about what happens following an example in which a reporting entity estimates its current period Scope 3 GHG emissions using information disclosed by another entity in its value chain from a prior period. So the reporting entity is using information from an entity in its value chain with a lag. When applying paragraph B50 of IFRS S1, which requires entity to revise prior period estimated amounts when new information becomes available, in this example, the emission information disclosed in the current period is the same as the comparative information disclosed for the preceding period. And that's because the entity updates the prior period with actual amounts, but then also uses those prior period amounts as an estimate for the current period. The question we received relates to whether such estimates are subject to the requirements in IFRS S1 to revise preceding period estimates. And I would encourage listeners to look at both the meeting summary and the agenda paper, where they'll find a helpful illustration of this example. The staff view in Agenda Paper 1 stated, in such circumstance, an entity is required to apply the requirements in paragraph B50 of IFRS S1 and do so in the context of the other related requirements in IFRS S1. So what does this mean for the company disclosures? It means providing investors with information about what was changed, how much is changed by, and why it was changed. Furthermore, there are two further considerations the staff highlighted in regard to the overall disclosure objective and the specific disclosure in IFRS S2. So these are, first, consistent with all disclosures required by ISSB standards. Paragraph B50 of IFRS S1 is subject to materiality, and therefore revisions of previously reported amounts would only need to be made if such information is material. And second, if it is impracticable for the entity to revise last year estimated amounts when presenting its comparative information, that then it doesn't need to.
Thanks, Veronica. I think it's important to highlight with this one also that we used a very simplified example in Agenda Paper 1 so that we could focus the discussion on the requirements and how the requirements would be applied. Also, for those keen listeners, I think it'd be helpful to point out that this requirement in IFRS S1 about when amounts previously reported need to be revised was also the subject of discussion at the March 2024 TIG meeting, however, in the context of a different question. So that's the question that was submitted and the staff views. But Sue, turning to you now, what feedback did members have when we put this question to them at the TIG meeting?
So we heard lots of useful points of feedback, and we can't cover everything in this episode. So I really encourage people to look at the meeting summary, which is on the TIG meeting page. But a few points I'd like to share. Firstly, the TIG members expressed agreement with the staff view on what the standard requires. The TIG members also emphasised materiality as a really important element to decide whether it's necessary to revise the preceding period estimates. So an entity must assess whether the disclosure is material, including whether the information about the difference between the amount that was previously disclosed, and the revised amount in the current period is material, and therefore whether the amount is required to be revised. So revisions of previously reported amounts are only required to be made if that information is material to users of general purpose financial reports. Another point that was raised by TIG members is that the revision in isolation may not be sufficient to enable an understanding of performance and trends for investors. So information may need to be provided to complement the information about the revised estimate. So for example, if an entity revises an amount in isolation without providing information about this revision in its disclosures, it may be leaving out information that would be material and useful to users trying to understand the reason for the revision. So when you revise a metric, you want to make sure that the overall picture conveyed by the disclosures makes sense and it's understandable for users. And finally, just a comment on the approach used to measure GHG emissions in this example. So Veronica mentioned that it was using the prior period information from somebody in the value chain. And TIG members thought that it was important to remind stakeholders that Scope 3 greenhouse gas emissions are required to be measured in accordance with requirements in our climate standard, IFRS S2, and that that standard includes a Scope 3 measurement framework. So an underlying assumption for what was discussed by the TIG in the meeting and in the paper was that using that lagged information from entities in the value chain wasn't an appropriate approach to use in accordance with that framework. So we're not blessing that that's, you know, always what people should be doing.
Thanks, Sue. Really helpful feedback from the TIG members and a useful summary from you. Let's turn now to agenda paper 2. This deals with how reporting entities should disclose comparative information when there's been a change in the composition of the reporting entity itself. So, for example, when there's been an acquisition or a disposal of a subsidiary. There were two questions covered as part of this discussion. First, how to apply these requirements in the context of IFRS S1, and then separately, how to apply these requirements more specifically in the context of providing information about greenhouse gas emissions in accordance with IFRS S2. So we're looking at the same requirement, the reporting, the comparative reporting requirements, and we're looking at it in the context of S1 and then in the context of S2. So let's start with the first question. Sue, can you tell us about the staff views in the paper?
Sure. And again, I recommend people look at the paper because this is quite hard to talk about, but it's a critical discussion. And what it really highlights at its core is this requirement that we have in our ISSB standards for entities to prepare their sustainability related financial disclosures for the same reporting entity that's providing information in the related financial statements. And that's really important just as a fundamental idea that we're using, because it means that the information disclosed in our sustainability reporting can be well connected to information in the financial statements, which is helpful for those using the reports. So what does that mean? It means that the sustainability-related financial disclosures that are provided when you use the ISSB standards should reflect the reporting entity's composition as it existed in the preceding period, consistent with the related financial statements. So whatever the group was that's reflected in the consolidated financial statements should be the group that's reflected in the sustainability reporting. So the staff used examples to explain this, and TIG members expressed agreement with these views. So the first example that was used was the acquisition of a subsidiary. And if the entity acquires a subsidiary during the current reporting period, the group that information is provided about in the comparative period wouldn't include that newly acquired subsidiary. It's just become part of the group for accounting in the current period. So to be consistent with the financial statements, the reporting entity or the group as it existed in the previous period doesn't include the subsidiary. And so that's what would be reflected as the group for the comparative information. The second example that was used was sort of the opposite of that. So the situation where there's a disposal of a subsidiary in the current reporting period. So in this case, the assumption is that that subsidiary ceases to be part of the consolidated group for accounting purposes in the financial statements in the current period. And even though the entity ceases to be part of the group during the current period, the comparative information will provide information about the consolidated group that includes that subsidiary, because that's consistent with the composition of the group in the financial statements in the prior period. So basically, follow the accounting.
Thanks, Sue. Really helpful that you walked through those examples, and I really like the punchline, just follow the accounting. And since the TIG members express agreement on these staff views, maybe it's better if I turn quickly to question two, which was the same question on comparative reporting, but how they're to be applied in the context of IFRS S2. And then we can come back to the TIG member observations broadly on both of these questions. So turning to you, Veronica, what was the focus of question two and what were the staff views?
Yes, indeed. Question two, which was about how the comparative information requirements are to be applied in the context of IFRS S2. And this question was asked because stakeholders want to understand whether there are any requirements in IFRS S2, including as it relates of the Greenhouse Gas Protocol Corporate Standard to measure the greenhouse gas emissions that would change the requirements in IFRS S1 about comparative information. And this is a useful opportunity for us to highlight how IFRS S2 uses the Greenhouse Gas Protocol Corporate Standard. And that is, it is only used to measure greenhouse gas emissions. Disclosure requirements, including disclosure requirements related to comparative information, are set out by the ISSB standards. So said simply, you use Greenhouse Gas Protocol Corporate Standard to measure your GHG emissions only, and you follow the ISSB standards for the related disclosure requirements. And with this, the staff view was that as there are no additional requirements in IFRS S2 related to the disclosure of comparative information that would change the requirement in IFRS S1, an entity would follow the comparative information requirements as applied in IFRS S1.
Thanks, Veronica. So what you're saying is in both of these cases, when preparing comparative information disclosures using IFRS S1 and using IFRS S2, the comparative information includes information about the reporting entity based on, let's call the membership of the consolidated group and the related financial statements in the comparative period. So the TIG members did share observations on the application of these requirements. Sue, would you like to share some of that feedback?
Sure. So the first point, which I've already mentioned, is really to highlight the requirement that the reporting entity be the same for the financial statements and the sustainability related financial disclosures. And we're really building on this here for the question, second question. So given this, the current reporting period and comparative information for the preceding reporting period should include information about the reporting entity given its composition during that relevant period. So based on the applicable gap that's used to determine, you know, what the group is for the consolidated entity in the related financial statements. So in other words, through the requirements in our standards, we want to make sure that the reporting entity reflected in the financial statements and the reporting entity reflected in the sustainability related financial disclosures is aligned for any given reporting period. So that's the punchline. The second point, and this is, I think, where it gets tricky, is this navigation between our requirements and the GHG protocol, which we do rely on. So it's about this interaction. And while information about GHG emissions is required to be provided for the consolidated reporting, the composition of the reporting entity, so what's in the group for accounting purposes, doesn't limit or determine the approach to how GHG emissions are required to be measured by the entity. And that's reminding people in IFRS S2, we say go to the GHG protocol. The GHG protocol allows an entity to choose a control approach or an equity share approach when measuring GHG emissions. And we're not messing with that in any way. The composition of the reporting entity doesn't limit the choices that are made when it comes to using the GHG protocol. So said differently, the discussion emphasized how in this context, the GHG protocol corporate standard only serves as an approach for the measurement of GHG emissions to report on the emissions for the consolidated group. The third and last point highlights the importance of connectivity right through what we're talking about here. So it's really important for companies preparing sustainability information using our standards to keep in mind that the information provided as part of the sustainability-related financial disclosures has to be understandable for users and connected in the context of other information provided elsewhere in the entity's general purpose financial reports, which includes the financial statements.
Thank you, Sue and Veronica. I think these were some really tough questions to talk through, but I think this is a really helpful summary of the June TIG meeting.
Thanks, Deonora. And I do recommend people read the meeting summary and maybe even the agenda papers, perhaps even watch the meeting, because there's a lot more detail than what we managed to cover today.
Yeah, and great point. All of our TIG meetings are recorded and you're available to watch on our website. So definitely echo Sue's comments to take a look and check those out. Just search Transition Implementation Group on ifrs.org to find the page for the TIG, and you can access all of this content that Sue just mentioned. Also, keep a lookout for the next meeting. It's going to take place on the 19th and 20th of September. And as a reminder, if you have questions when you're applying the ISSB standards, remember, the TIG is available and you can submit questions via our website. And you'll find more information on our website about criteria and the types of questions that the TIG can address. So with that, we'll sign off and we look forward to our next discussion.